Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, tgstore.co.uk.
The home of Gore Bikewear, Gore Running Wear and Aquasphere wetsuits. You can get 10% off with the code OXYGENADDICT10 and you can win a Gore bike or a Gore run jacket at tgstore.co.uk/OXYGENADDICT.
We're also brought to you by precisionhydration.com,
who are leaders in triathlete sweat testing and hydration with multi-strength electrolytes that match how you sweat. There's 15% off with the code OXYGENADDICT15.
And wearetribe.co.
Natural sports nutrition delivered direct to you. You can get a free trial pack of 6 delicious energy bars, trail mix, recovery bars and shakes for just, Rob, £1.
No way. Just £1?
£1 by using the code OXYGENADDICT.
It's a no-brainer, Helen.
It is a no-brainer.
And welcome to the show, everybody. It's great, great, great to have you back on. And Hels, how are you doing today?
I'm in a great mood today.
I could tell in the pre-show chat, actually. You are bubbling like a little pressure cooker, aren't you?
Like a pressure cooker of happiness. And I don't even know why. Good.
Because you've just got off the turbo today. And you're full of endorphins, that's why.
That could be why, and I was a little bit frustrated before I got on the turbo, and then I unleashed my frustration on the turbo, and it did the trick, and now I'm like, happy, happy Helen. And it was quite a disgusting turbo, which you might have set, so...
Yeah, apologies for that. Sorry, not sorry. Sorry to everybody racing you next weekend.
It kind of hurt.
Yeah, well, it's meant to hurt now, so you can go and enjoy the taste of sweet victory on race day.
It kind of hurt, and the last little bit, I had to press play on... There's two songs at the moment. You know, I usually sort of say, oh, there's a couple of songs which I just keep on pressing play, repeat, yeah. Play. Yeah. So,
do you have
them,
to go to the locker?
One of them was Scooter, the Logical song, which is potentially one of the worst songs you've ever heard in your life, but actually on the turbo it's quite good.
I don't know what that is, but that's,
it's dreadful.
Is it like an earworm song?
It was probably out about 10 years ago.
Okay,
honestly, it's so bad. And then the other one is Usher, and
interesting.
I'm just like, yeah, get on it.
Interesting. Yeah, I've always got to reach for the Foo Fighters when it comes to that point. They're my go-to, eyes closed. Go to the happy place.
Yeah, yeah.
Get the pretender on.
The logical song. It might be the illogical song. I don't know, but it helped.
Good. Well, I'm glad you got that. You got that tucked away. So, apologies to any females racing at the Half Outlaw at the weekend. Helen is coming with her teeth gritted to find you. By the sound of things.
No, no, no. I won't be. I'll be there.
Just for fun. There and smiling.
Yeah, there and smiling
on the outside.
I'm looking forward to it now.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Looks like the weather's going to be good as well.
Please don't speak too soon, Roberto.
Well, weather looks a little bit shaky this week and then clearing up for the weekend. That's what I saw.
Well, I saw the same, but I kind of think it might be one of those things that, you know, when they don't really know the weather yet, they just put in cloud or like sunny spells.
Do you think that's what they do? They just go, we just can't work it out. Just
yeah.
put the cloud with the showers and the rainbow and the thunderstorm on. Put that one up.
Yeah, we'll just put the cloud, sunny spells, and then actually, as you get closer, we'll add the raindrops in. That's what I'm thinking might happen.
It's going to be one of those days where it's overcast and raining to start with and you finish with a sunburn.
Yeah, maybe. You know what, actually, I rode on Friday, one day last week, into work, right? And, you know, we've had really, really nice weather recently. And then Thursday or Friday, whichever day it was,
the
heavens
broke,
opened,
didn't it?
Right? Yeah. I got so drenched. I just got soaked through to the point that I thought, I can't even take my cycle shoes off when I walk into this building, because usually I want to, because I always think this floor is quite slippy, but I thought, my socks are just...
When you get caught in that kind of April showers weather, it's beastly, isn't it?
Yeah, and then, you know when you can sit there and you just feel like you've got a cold coming on, I thought, oh, Helen, that's so stupid of you, you've probably got a chill now. Anyway, it's fine. It went away.
A chill. You caught a chill on your tummy. That's the thing that grands used to say in the 70s.
I know,
Helen, you'll get a chill on your tummy.
It must be true.
Or not, because you didn't get one.
Yeah, but I felt it coming on. I thought, oh no, please don't, Helen, you stupid person. Because I left and I thought, within 2 minutes, I was like, sugar, it's pretty cold.
It's it can really change, can it?
Anyway, another one for the tick the mental box, Rob.
Well
So the other
done.
week I did the cold swim. I've done the cold. I've done the wet horrible ride.
You ready?
Ready.
You're ready. Just get out there and have fun on race day. So everyone's got to say hi to Helen if you're racing at the Half Outlaw or supporting at the Half Outlaw this Sunday. You'll be skimping around in your new Team Oxygen Addict skin suit, won't you? So
I
give
will
Helen a
be.
big smile. Skin tight outfit, big smile, give her a wave.
They're quite tight, Rob.
Funny that, yeah. Funny that, what have them been called, skin suits? Is it not really baggy like a massive balloon that catches loads of air? Is it in fact the fastest piece of clothing in the West?
You just feel quite self-conscious in it because it's that tight. But anyway,
Yeah,
I'm
it
not
is
even
a
a
bit.
bloke.
You just gotta run fast, Helen.
Anyway, yeah, it's black. It has Oxygen Addict on it. Give me a cheer, please, if you see me. Thanks.
Yeah, basically anybody in that kit, just cheer. Well done, Helen. So you're sure to get it. There's a few guys racing this weekend, guys and girls, actually. Hells, you should have a bit of support there.
Oh, great,
Yeah, it'd
great.
be good fun.
Beautiful.
Well, I've got some news for you as well, Helen.
Oh, please, go on.
I have committed to enter the ultramarathon.
Yes, Rob, this is great
I
news.
am in.
Oh, how did it feel when you pressed enter?
Well, it didn't quite happen like that. What happened was I told Rushy I'm in, and then the next thing I knew, there was a post on Facebook from the organizer saying, "Congratulations to Rob Wilby, who's just entered," and he'd done it for me.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so I was like, "Oh, no backing out now then." Matt was like, "Yeah, get in. Start running,
Oh,
son."
well done, Matt Rushbrook.
Yeah, good on him. So we're going on another recce this weekend. We're taking the camper vans up and we'll mainly be running during daylight hours over this coming weekend.
That is, oh, Rob, this is great. I'm really happy for you.
And it's 53 miles, not 50. As if 50 isn't scary enough. They had to add a loop in to make it a double marathon and then a little bit extra just for fun.
It'll be great.
It will.
Honestly, it will be such an incredible
It'll be great.
achievement. And I liked what did so everyone who has been listening to the podcast for a while will know that we did the charity fundraising this year, and that was because of your friend Mark Mills, who sadly passed away
That's right, yeah.
last year. So what was his kind of what was the message
His
that was in
quote,
your
yeah,
brain?
you've got to do something every year that scares you. And I'm pretty
Okay.
scared right now. I really don't know whether I can do it. I really don't know.
Well, Rob,
Like,
coming at honestly.
it's a very funny place to be in when you're quite confident in your ability to do stuff usually, you know? I don't need to tell you this, you know.
No, but I think that is the most normal feeling that goes through. Everybody on that start line is going to be feeling the same. And,
Apart from Rushy, who's
everybody,
trying to
so many
race
people
people.
listening to this are thinking, I've entered this thing. I'm not talking about your ultra, whatever you might have entered, whether it's your first triathlon, whether it's your first 10K, everyone thinks, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's given me a real remembrance of how it felt 10 or 15 years ago to enter things like this. So that's been a really good thing. But yeah, it's scary in a kind of enlivening way, isn't it? You wake up in the morning all tingly and think, better get the running kit on then.
Yeah, because and the other thing is, I guess previously for you, your Achilles has been a right pain in the backside or pain in the Achilles, right? But it's not to do with the injury this time, is it? It's to do with the distance, which is, I guess, putting a bit of fear into you and the time on your feet.
Achilles is behaving, which is very good. So yeah, just a case of getting out there and doing it, really.
It's a case of getting out there, it's a case of breaking it down, it's a case of keeping eating, and it's a case of being as prepared as possible with all the kit. So then, if the weather's dreadful, then you've got it. Or if the weather's amazingly sunny or whatever, you keep hydrated, you have your sun cream, all those kind of things. It's about preparation.
I
You know
like
you can
it.
do it.
I'm taking you on, Helen. You're going to be my motivational coach. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. We can talk more about that, actually, Rob. In an upcoming episode, we will be speaking with a sports psychologist. I recorded the interview this morning.
Oh, brilliant. So, you did it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. So there'll be plenty of tips and strategies.
So we think that one might be out in a couple of weeks, don't we? That's good.
Yep.
And that leads us into a nice segue, actually, because today's interview is with a guy called Guy Hacking, who most of you won't have heard of. Guy is an ultra runner and has done all kinds of crazy bonkers things, but he's also the one of the founders of Tribe Nutrition, sponsors of the show. So when I heard his story, I thought, oh, we've got to get this guy on the show. It's absolutely brilliant. So tune in for that later on with stories from the Marathon des Saab and all kinds of crazy 30-day ultra runs and things like this. You're going to love it, Helen.
Oh,
it's going to be great.
Oh, you know I love inspiring people.
Oh, the him and his two mates, they're just brilliant. It's a really, really good story. All right, let's jump over. Let's do results first from this weekend, because there's quite a lot of racing going on this weekend. So our results are sponsored by tgstore.co.uk. TG Store, as you know, selling Gore bikewear, Gore running wear and Aquasphere wetsuits in the UK. And one of the really cool things about them being the sponsor is it isn't actually Gore that sponsors the show. It's a family that sell Gore clothes exclusively through their website. So one of the chats Helen and I had with Andy when we sat down with him, he was saying, look, what we want to get across through sponsoring the show is we want the reasons why people should buy from us rather than buying from one of the other massive online retailers. So him and his wife sat down and had to think about the extra things that they could do to offer kind of old world service in a new world market economy, really. So some of the really cool things that will happen if you buy your Gore bikewear or your Gore running wear from them is you'll get things like all your Gore-Tex garments will be delivered with a free sachet of Grainger's reproofing solution. So once you've worn your jacket for 6 months and it loses that, you know, that nice ability, Helen, where it's all beading and all the water runs off and it doesn't really last that. Yeah. It doesn't last for more than 6 months, does it? Well, wash your Gore-Tex jacket in that and it gets reproofed. It gets cleaned as well, so it's not quite as stinky, which is, you know, probably a good thing if you Gore-Tex jacket.
Not like the Rob Wilby stink.
No, not like the Rob Wilby Gore-Tex. It was a revelation for me the first time I washed my jacket in that, and I was like, wow, not only does it bead again, it's actually breathable again, and it doesn't have that strange odor. Imagine that. So don't go like 6 years without washing your Gore-Tex jacket. They actually make stuff to do it in. Right, another benefit of shopping with them is that all the customers are entitled to a free performance wash and reproofing by returning the jacket to the store. So if you don't want to reproof your jacket yourself, you can parcel it up, send it to them, they'll wash it and reproof it and send it back to you just for the cost of postage, which is pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
So really cool stuff. And one other thing to draw attention to, this time of year, as Hels has alluded to, you're going out in the mornings and it's really cold, you're coming back in the evenings and it's really warm. So what you need is a temperature clothing guide, Helen. You need someone to say to you,
definitely,
if the temperature's like, that's what you need, mate. You need a little thermometer outside your kitchen window. Cross-references with the TG Store clothing temperature guide and it'll tell you which of the Gore outfits you need to be wearing today to keep yourself warm and toasty in the mornings and to not be too hot on the way home.
I think that sounds like a plan. That's a real plan.
That's a plan and a half, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's cool. So listen, get yourself over there, check it out. They've got some real bargains. If you fill out your email address into their little system, you'll be entered into a prize draw to win Gore bikewear jacket or Gore runwear jacket. And also, if you use the code, oh, help me out, Helen, OxygenAddict10, isn't it?
Yep.
You'll get 10% off your purchase there. So please support the guys who support the show. They allow us to do this and keep the show free. That's awesome.
Brilliant. So, Rob, let's start off, because I reckon quite a few people might have seen it on their telly boxes over the weekend,
yeah,
or on catch-up. It was the World Triathlon Series race in Yokohama this weekend, and we're going to give a big shout out to Sophie Caldwell, who is 22 years old, and she finished top Brit at Yokohama in the elite races. And Rob, it was quite nice actually. She put on Twitter afterwards, never thought I'd be riding a two up with the current world champ. Amazing experience, lots learnt, and a fourth place. So I mean, she was right up there.
Brilliant.
With Flora Duffy.
Did she get off the front with Flora?
she was riding up there with Flora, yeah. So
nice.
Yeah, she did brilliant because she's an awesome super duper swimmer. And then clearly pretty
handy on the bike and the run as well.
Yeah. So she was riding, and then it was just honestly just towards the end that she got overtaken. So fantastic performance from Sophie. So the and then I should actually say Vicky Holland was next Brit to finish. She was fifth. But she said that she, on the plane, basically, she got on the plane fine. And when she got off the plane, she had a calf injury. So she wasn't 100% fit. So finishing fifth with a calf injury, that is blinking good going, Vicky Holland. And on Stanford, she had a crash. She finished seventh. Jess Learmonth, who we had on recently, she was eighth. And Lucy Hall, 11th. So, you know,
stacked. Four in the top 11.
Yeah, and if you think about it, if a lot of them didn't have the best races, yet you had that many in the top 11, I think that's pretty solid, to be honest. Yeah. So Flora Duffy won, and massive shout-out to Flora Duffy, Rob. She got the biggest winning margin since, I think, Emma Snowsill at Budapest or something mad like that. So she finished in 156.18. Katie Zafiris of the US was second, 158.09, ahead of her American teammate, Kirsten Casper. So that was the women's race.
Long way in an Olympic distance race, that 2 minutes ahead.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, really quite impressive. Then in the men's, I think everyone will have seen Johnny Brownlee, basically was involved in a crash as well. So quite a few Brits were involved in a crash. Jess Learmonth in the women's race as well. But what happened with Johnny was that he essentially went over the railings, Rob, when someone else crashed. He tried to avoid them, went over the railings. His bike was a complete mess. But then he ran the kilometre back to transition. And by that point, you're thinking, he was standing there for a little bit and you're thinking, oh, his race is completely over.
Race over.
But no, not for Johnny Brownlee. So Johnny Brownlee picks up his bike and then runs.
Legend.
All the way to transition with his bike. And then, yeah, did the run and he still finished. He finished 42nd, which was really not last. And he did 155. Up at the other end, Rob, Mario Mola won, so defending world champion, in 148.15, ahead of Fernando Alonso of Spain. And then Christian Blumenfelt of Norway was third. And Rob, honestly, I was watching the men's race, and Christian Blumenfelt and Henry Schoeman were quite close, really, on the run. Henry Schoeman, with about a kilometre, maybe 2K to go, went ahead, and you're thinking, oh, unlucky Christian. And then suddenly, down the chute, Christian Blumenfelt comes past, and you're like, where on earth did that, where did he get that from? It was amazing. It was really cool.
Good stuff. Lovely bit of fast racing.
Yeah, honestly. But it was the fact that you just thought, oh, no, he's gone. Henry's
blown.
And then, no, don't write off Christian Blumenfelt. Awesome athlete.
Very impressive.
Gordon Bentham was the highest Brit in 11th. Tom Bishop, 12th. And then we've mentioned Johnny Brownlee, 42nd. And Adam Bowden, unfortunately, was a DNF.
Right, over to 70.3 Mallorca, where we had wins for David McNamee and second place for Emma Pallant.
We did indeed. I was following a little bit of that, Rob, as well, on Twitter, that one. And David McNamee defeated three-time champion Andreas Streit. So it was a great, great win. And he said afterwards, a victory that I will always remember, pushed to a whole new level of hurt today.
Yeah, I think he was 3.5 minutes down after Wright's off the bike, wasn't he? Which is pretty amazing with an Uber bike like Wright. So again, it shows McNamee's raised his game even more over the winter. And then to produce a run like that, to win by a minute, that's an amazing performance by him. Super, super, super impressive. He's a superstar. We've got to get him on the show.
We will keep trying. I have tried a couple of times. I think you've tried. We will keep trying.
Come on, David. If anyone knows David, tell him, right, you need to get on the podcast. Come on. It's time. We need to interview you. We need to find out about the pain of catching that guy for 3.5 minutes, of catching Andreas Streit.
Yeah.
And then over in the women's race, Emma Pallant had a stonking run, didn't she?
She did. She did. Absolutely.
Was it 120 that she did, from memory?
I'll have to double check. Yes,
yeah, it
did.
Was 120.09.
She's amazing. She is a superb runner, yeah. Rob. She yeah. comes from a running background.
We always said that. She did. She was out of the hunt for first, but she ran herself all the way through and pushed all the way to the line, considering she had about a 7-minute margin on third place. And she was still 4 minutes behind first. So that's a really impressive performance from her, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So awesome work from Emma Pallant. And she was ahead of her teammate, actually, Amelia Watkinson of New Zealand. And Will Clark actually had a decent race too, Rob. He was fourth in the men's race.
Yeah, did. So in the men's race, David McNamee first, Andreas Dreitz second, Miguel Blanchard in third, and Will Clark backs up in fourth. Pro women, Laura Phillip took it out, with Emma Pallant second and Amelia Watkinson in third. Yeah, so awesome. The season is officially started.
It has.
Yeah, Mallorca's my official start to the year in my head. The season has started.
Love it. Love it. Love it. It's almost like it never finishes though, Rob. You get like 1 or 2 weeks, don't you, in January where you think, oh, it's quite quiet.
Yeah. You're right, actually, these days there's a lot. And it used to be that Ironman New Zealand would be there on its own in March, wouldn't it? Nothing much going on, and then Ironman South Africa in April with nothing much going on, but now there's dozens of races all the time. But now it's officially started mid-May. It's warm enough to go swimming, everyone. I don't care how cold it is, it's warm enough to go swimming in mid-May.
It is. I've done it twice now.
What was the water like in Boundary this weekend?
Oh yeah, so
how did it compare to Salford the week
Salford
before?
Keys. Okay, so Salford Keys the other week was really cold. Water temperature, I think about 13 degrees, but outside it was about 9 or 10, so that didn't help. And that is a city centre location, and it is the Keys, which are just a couple of miles outside of the city centre of
deep
Manchester.
And murky.
So then roll on a week, and there is, it's like a sailing lake a bit closer. It's not in the city centre at all. So it's a lot more sheltered there, and it's a lot shallower as well. So the water warms up faster, usually gets weeds in it about 2 days after it opens, but it seems to be clearer this year. And I think the water temperature there, it must have been more like 16, Rob. It was actually really nice.
Okay.
Yeah, that's like the initial.
It makes a difference if you're in on a warm day as well, and especially if the sun's shining on you, doesn't it? That can make the temperature feel so much different.
That's it. So even if the water was still only 15, it definitely felt warmer.
Okay.
It was a lot more comfortable than last week. And I said last week was more about the mental ticking that box. This week I actually managed to swim a decent two laps rather than going, oh my god, get me out of here.
Brilliant. Alright, so next result we're going to look at is 70.3 Santa Rosa, which used to be Vineman in California, where we had a win for Holly Lawrence in the men's race, not in the men's race, clearly in the women's race. So she had another stonking performance and just drilled it on the bike from what she read. She basically blew herself to pieces, and with 10 miles to go, it said she was rolling all over the place and only just got herself back to T2 and then kind of refueled with Sarah Pianpiano chasing her down and managed to come back round. So she took the win in 4:13, with Sarah Pianpiano in second in 4:18 and Kaiser Leighton in third. In the men's race, Sam Appleton took it out in 3:46 with Joe Gambles and Tim O'Donnell in second and third, with Fraser Cartmell back in 11th. We had a bit of celebrity action there as well, didn't we?
We did, Rob, because Jenson Button, former Formula One world champion, qualified in his age group for the 70.3 World Championships by winning his age group. He won the men's 35 to 39 category. And you know how some people got a little bit annoyed that what's the chef called, Rob?
Gordon Ramsay. Yeah.
Yeah. Got a place at Kona, raced at Kona, and people were saying, oh, you know, he didn't deserve it,
didn't
qualify.
Earn it, didn't win it, yeah.
There is none of that with Jenson Button, okay? No. Here are his splits, right? This and Try 24/7 have done a really cool comparison with Holly Lawrence. Just to show how decent an athlete Jenson Button is.
So this is Holly Lawrence, Uber biker Holly Lawrence, who destroyed the female pro field. Don't forget, right? She's not just a somebody. World champion Holly Lawrence.
Yeah. So Jenson Button, 28:45 swim.
Holly Lawrence 24:38 swim.
T1, he could sort out T1 a little bit. 4:53.
Yeah, Holly's 3:20.
So on the bike, Jensen Button did a 2:15.
Holly Lawrence did a 2:18.
T2, again, he lost a few seconds there. He did a 2:06.
1:54 for Holly Lawrence.
And then Jensen Button's run, 1:22:52.
1:25:17.
So in total, Jensen Button took the win in the male 35-39 with 4:13:54.
And Holly Lawrence did 4:13:20, managing to sneak herself about 150 metres in front, in real space, in front of Jensen Button. But doesn't that underline what an amazing athlete he is? And if he was a bit faster getting his underpants on in T1... He gave her a minute and a half in T1 and then lost to her by 30 seconds. So actually, I tell you what, that's a really impressive performance, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think he was, I'm sure he was leading at Oceanside or like right up there, kind of all was on for the win.
Yeah, and, he got DQ'd, didn't he?
Yeah.
There was like a bit you had to ride through slowly and he just zipped through it, not surprisingly, being Jensen Button. I want to see him step up to Ironman.
Yeah, it'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be. That'd be great to have him on there. To have the crossover of celebrity and genuinely really fast contender for... Yeah, I'm not going to say he's going to be a contender for the winning Kona in the male 35, but he's going to be well up there, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. So, chapeau to Jensen Button and everyone at Santa Rosa.
That's an amazing run off that bike, you know, 1:22.
I know.
That is, yeah.
I'm still getting over that one.
Does anybody know Jensen Button? Let's get him on the show.
Rob, stop saying that.
Oh, I'd love to get Jensen Button on the show.
Stop saying it. Stop saying it.
Do you know anything about motor racing?
Do I?
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you follow it?
Yeah.
Right, well, there you go. It's your interview. Come on. Well, get him on. There we go. Get him on. It says he's a big fan of triathlon. He must be a listener. Jensen, if you're listening, get in contact. I mean, Mr. Button, if you're listening, get in contact.
Yeah. Right. Rob, now stop saying all these people that you want on the podcast.
Okay. Create your own reality, Helen. Make it happen.
Yep. All of that. Okay. Right. Over to Monterey 70.3, Rob.
I drive you crazy, don't I? Monterey 70.3. We had... Now, let's flash back in time 2 years. 2 years ago, the lovely Helen went over to race Monterey 70.3. We were dreaming of palm trees and hot sun, sunburn, and Helen got torrential downpours and if I remember rightly, cobbles that rode like glass that everyone fell off on. Am I correct?
The cobbles, yeah.
Not so this year. Beautiful, hot, sunny day. Looks like it was lovely, like, doesn't it?
33 degrees.
Delicious. Perfect temperature for racing. And a win for our mate Kevin Collington, which if you haven't listened to the interview with him, go back and listen to it. He's a super awesome guy and sent through at massive personal cost to himself an enormous box of stuff for our free podcast prize draw with loads of backpacks and clothes and stuff in. So... he's the man, and it's brilliant to see Karma Payne back with a massive win, the Monterey 70.3.
Yep, definitely. And Rob, the other one I want to give a shout out to is the women's winner, Jeannie Seymour, who we mentioned last week, because she finished second, didn't she?
That's right.
At St. George.
Yeah.
So basically, she is on fire at the moment, and she took out the win in the women's race, a massive gap as well by 5 minutes, so 4:07 ahead of Liz Lyles 4:12. So yeah, absolutely amazing. She did, I think, she 1:21 run, so wow. It wasn't the fastest, but yeah,
1:21.
Awesome stuff. 1:21,
that is super fast.
Mm-hmm.
wow wowzers. All right, so let's jump over and let's do Coach's Couch.
Let's do that.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a different one this week because it hasn't been a question that's been sent in, but it's been something that's come up with athletes that I've been working with recently, and I thought it seems like a good time to talk about this because in England, and I think probably in America as well, races are starting to kick off now. The season proper is upon us. Yet the water hasn't warmed up yet and the weather can be a little bit indeterminate a lot of the time. So it could be that you get a beautiful early summer day and the weather's perfect, but it could be that you get it to be 9 degrees and raining like it was for you in your swim the other week, Hel. So what I thought we'd do is a kind of roundup of the things we've talked about of racing in colder weather and early season. So tips for people when they're going down. Because if you get that beautiful sunny day, it's not going to be a problem for anyone. But if you don't, I think you need to be a little bit prepared to get the best out of yourself so that you don't blow your race just because of not being prepared. Does that make sense?
Agree. I think it's a really good... Yeah, definitely.
Right, cool. So the first thing we're going to talk about, I had an athlete race the other week who had bought a training plan from our site, and she sent me an email afterwards to say, I've just done this, it was her first proper Olympic triathlon and it was amazing, but I couldn't swim. I got in the water and it was so cold it felt like I couldn't breathe and I couldn't get my head in the water and I had to do breaststroke the whole way. And she was really upset that she'd done all this training and she hadn't been able to execute the swim. So I just wanted to reinforce that first thing. Like, the first thing is you are going to have to acclimate your body to the cold water, even if you haven't got into practice, which we highly recommend in the couple of weeks leading up to it, like Helen's talked about, she's done. Get yourself in on race morning, a good 10 minutes before your wave starts, and just lie face down in the water. So the first thing you've got to do is get your face used to being in the water, and it's going to mess with your breathing massively, and it's probably going to make you feel like you're hyperventilating. But that feeling will pass within a few minutes, so you've just got to put your face in the water, blow out into the water, take your face up, whimper a little bit, put your face back into the water, blow out again, whimper to yourself, take your face out, decide you're taking up golf and selling your bike, do it again. By the time you've been through the process of mentally putting your bike on eBay, everything's going to be fine and you're going to be used to it. Then you've got to let a bit of water down the front of your wetsuit and stand up, and that's going to be horrible, but you're going to do it anyway. So pull open the neck of your suit, let some water in, stand up, so you've done this in the shallows, and then walk out of the water and squeegee yourself, so you rub your hands downwards down your chest, and that'll rub all that horrible cold water all the way down inside your suit, down through your legs and out at your ankles, and that will kind of form a vacuum seal so that no more cold water is going to get in when you're actually swimming. The little layer of water that's in there is going to warm up quite quickly and you're going to be great to go because your face is acclimated, your suit's sort of watertight, and you're good to go. And the other tip is you're going to have two hats on. You had two hats the other day, didn't you, Hels?
Yeah, I had two the other day, and I only had one this week.
Did I see you with one of those? Was it one of those tier, like a thermally type one?
Yes.
Brilliant, aren't they?
It's a blue tier hat. It doesn't. It's not one which you know. You see the ones which have got like a chin strap. It isn't one of those. It's just like a normal swim hat, but made from different material.
That's right, they're made from some sort of heat reflecting material, and I've got one as well, and they're really, really good. So if you don't like that feeling of having a neoprene thing under your chin, and I get that, a lot of people don't like it, get one of these tier hats that have got the thermal kind of, they're called thermal swim caps, I think, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And get that. Even if you haven't got one of that, just put two swim hats on, and that'll help insulate the top of your head, and that'll help that horrible freezing cold feeling of somebody spraying ice cream right through the top of your head. So that's going to deal with problems of breathing and stuff in the water, and you'll actually be able to swim front crawl. Now, the next thing to think about, Hels, is when we get out of the water, it's how we're going to deal with the fact that the ambient temperature might not be the warmest, toastiest in the world. So a few things I came up with. Put socks on before you get on the bike. It's worth a few seconds to you, but it's going to help your feet warm up a little bit, because we all know what that feeling of having your feet like blocks of ice is like. The second thing you can do is get toe covers on your bike shoes already. So they make either neoprene or windstopper toe covers that just go over the toes of your shoes. They don't affect you being able to get your shoes on and off quickly, but they make a massive difference to the warmth of your feet. And also, I'm going to suggest at this time of year, if you can wear some kind of base layer underneath your wetsuit, like one of those, you know, those Nike ProFit tops.
Yep.
They're really good. They're really cheap. You can get them for about 10 quid in Sports Direct. But they dry out really quickly and they're super warm. So get one of those on. And if not, get another tri-top on. So wear two tri-tops and get a pair of arm warmers as well. And you might even want to think about having gloves available if it's super, super cold. And if you're like Hels and you really struggle with the cold. So a few things you can do there that are really super simple. And all you've got to do is put them in your bag and then leave them by your bike on race morning. And if you're freezing cold when you get out, you can take that extra minute to put those extra layers on and off you go. My one sort of thing to be aware of is think ahead of time what you're going to wear, because if you end up putting a gilet on or you end up putting just a cycle jersey on over the top, if you're the kind of athlete who's going to be competitive, you're giving away all the advantage you've got by having a skin suit. So the stuff you're going to wear has got to be skin tight if you want to be fast and competitive on the bike. Otherwise, if stuff's flapping around, you're giving away 20, 30 watts probably, which is a winter's worth of training. So you have to have something on that's super, super skin tight.
I'm going to chip in here, Rob.
Yeah, go on, do.
So Staffordshire 70.3, again, that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Mm.
I went with the arm warmer option. So I just had a normal tri-suit top, but I did put arm warmers on. And for the beginning, it made a difference. You know that even July last year, Ironman UK, I wore gloves for the whole of the bike ride.
Yeah.
And I said to you, I am so glad I put them on.
Yeah.
I do have cold hands. We all know that. So that's fine. So I will do that. Socks on the bike for a half Ironman, I haven't done for quite a while, but I was thinking about that today. Would I put them on? I still don't know actually if I would.
It's like you're going to put socks on at some point for a half Ironman. You're going to put your socks on for the run. So if you can put them on before the bike, and obviously you don't get them covered in crap and stuff running out with your bike, but if you're going to put them on at some point, it's not going to waste that much time to put them on before the bike compared to putting them on before the run.
No, I was thinking about it, but I was thinking about it in my head and I was thinking, right, well, if it's grass and stuff that you're coming into, then and there's a chance that grass is going to get all muddy and things.
Yeah.
I would probably still not bother with socks in T1.
Yeah.
But I would have my one pair of socks to go on in T2. If, I don't know, if it's concrete and things like that, and they're not going to get quite so wrecked, because basically I don't want to be putting socks on twice, I would probably put them on for the bike. The only other thing, sorry, just to throw it out there, my cycle shoes are quite thin. My running socks are a little bit thicker.
Okay.
So running socks don't necessarily go with my cycle shoes, if that makes sense. It all fits fine when it happens to work.
Okay.
So you can see the dilemmas.
Yeah.
There's always dilemmas, Rob.
Yeah.
And then, I think I do remember the first few triathlons I did. I put a running jacket on the bike once because it was like biblical. That was all I had at the time. And, if that is all you have, then heck, stick it on, because there's nothing worse than being like so miserable and actually on the edge of kind of hypothermia. So
wow.
Yeah. I'd say just be sensible and go with what you've got, and you want to finish the race, don't you?
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the thing. I think if it's going to be a question of going fast or not finishing, you want to go with finishing.
Correct. Exactly.
You want to be warm. So for the kind of newer people to the sport, I think the message we want to underline is let's get you to the point where you're nice and cozy and toasty and you can do your race. And then as you progress through the sport and you get to the point where you want to be more competitive, there's this question of needing to cut corners a little bit in order, maybe you sacrifice a little bit of comfort for the ability to win. And that's a difficult line, isn't it? It's knowing what to do. I remember really struggling on a cold morning at a sprint triathlon trying to pull arm warmers over wet arms because it was really cold, and not being able to do it, and then racing and being fine anyway, but missing out on a podium place by a handful of seconds and thinking, damn it, I wrestled with those arm warmers for 30 seconds. So I think as you go through your journey, things have got to change, haven't they?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I remember putting a t-shirt on and another one, but there was something really stupid, like I hadn't taken something vital off to be able to get my t-shirt, I don't know, and then I was like, oh god, I've got to do the whole thing again. Probably a helmet or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, so, bless. All right, good. So I hope that helps people out. Any questions, drop us an email. You can just send it over to help@oxygenaddict.com, and we'll give you any advice we can help you out with. Thank you very much. So, time for a bit of news, Hells. There's a few things going on around the world.
I think so. And our news is brought to you by our lovely friends at wearetribe.co, so natural sports nutrition. And Rob, Claire Sutcliffe got in touch with us with a photo of her Tribe bar. She said, look what arrived today, yum. So she had ordered them. She had a sour cherry and buckwheat bar, some Hadrian trail mix.
Nice.
And Rob, mine also, I ordered some. And I actually got two boxes through the letterbox, and I thought, why? What's this about? Why have they done two boxes?
Favoritism.
I don't really understand. Why are there two? I swear I only ordered one. And then later that day, I got an email from them saying, hi, you're one of a few people who we made an error with. You know, we've sent out two boxes rather than one. Rest assured, you've not been charged twice. Keep your box. Enjoy the box. How good's that?
Brilliant. Love it.
Just shows what good guys they are, Rob.
Well, we've got the interview coming up later on, which, yeah, people are going to be able to hear the story of that from there. But I just want to, we'll give it a little bit of the sponsorship chat here. If you want to know about the bars that they've got two kinds of energy bars. They've got the Blaze Trails energy bars, which have got 25 grams of carbohydrates in, and they've got the Infinity bars that have got 35 grams of carbohydrates in, so one slightly bigger than the other, but they're all high quality natural ingredients, vegan, gluten free and dairy free. And we've got these flavors like cacao and orange and cacao and almond, and I just love it. It's brilliant.
That cacao and orange one's really nice.
I love that one that had the, I think it was the chocolate salt bar, the Infinity bar was my absolute favorite, and it activated that thing in me where I was like, okay, I can never buy these because I'll just eat the whole box of them one after the other. They won't get saved for like going out for a bike ride. I will eat them in the evening, so I can't have them in the house.
I hid them straight away. I was like, they are going in the bag.
Don't tell Rich. Right, don't tell him where they are.
They've been hidden.
So get over there onto the Tribe website, check out their stuff. If you haven't yet taken advantage of the offer, it's £1 for their 6-item sample pack. That'll be £1 including delivery to get sent to you. It gets posted through the door box. It's an absolute no-brainer. We want you guys to just get this stuff and to try it out. And if you use the code OXYGENADDICT at checkout, it'll let you have that trial box for £1 instead of the usual, I think it's £8.90 or something like that. So get over there, get it ordered, and get yourself some delicious snacks for your training and your racing. They're going to be powering me around the ultramarathon. I tell you now, Helen, I'm going to be stuffing myself full of chocolate salt bars.
Yeah, they're going to be powering us through Italy on our bikes, I tell you.
Nice.
Yeah. So looking forward to it. Right, Rob, let's hit you with some news. First up, we've already mentioned Johnny Brownlee, but I reckon I want to give a little mention here to Lucy Gossage, who's going to be racing at Ironman Lanzarote this weekend.
Yeah.
If you go on her Twitter feed, she has put up a little pre-race video, and my goodness, it just makes you think, doesn't it?
It's really moving, isn't it? It's really, really, I don't know how she kind of said it without weeping, but yeah, she talks about,
I think
there
was a lump in her throat.
Well, there was definitely a lump in my throat as she was saying it. She was talking about her work as a cancer doctor and some of the guys that are in her care at the moment and how she's kind of racing for them this coming weekend at Lanzarote. Man, oh man, it got me.
Yeah. No, I watched it and I just thought, wow, it just makes you think. It just makes you put everything into perspective, doesn't it? And Lucy said that actually it's really helped her going back to work as an oncologist and, you know, seeing other people, these two guys that she's, you know, helping out now, and she said they're probably never going to be able to ride their bikes again, and she will have that in her head when she said that she's suffering on Ironman Lanzarote. She'll be thinking of them.
Good work, Lucy. She's a previous winner of Ironman Lanzarote, actually, isn't she? So it'd be great. She said in the video she doesn't think she's in lifetime best shape, but she's not far off, which has got to put a chill down the spine of anybody who's racing her. Considering she finished top 10 at Kona, not feeling in the best shape ever. So now Torsten over at Tri Rating is predicting her to go 9:29, which is a lot faster than she went last time she raced there. It's about 10 minutes faster, I think. And it's only about a minute behind what Rachel Joyce did there when she set what I believe to be the course record a few years ago. So it'd be interesting to see if she can go that fast. But it's made for her, that bike course, isn't it? hilly, windy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's racing Karine Abraham, Diana Reisler, Alexandra Tonda, Tina Hulse, Jenny Colon. There's a good field there. Now, Lucy Charles has been ranked 8th by Torsten, and I think she's really going to surprise people.
I do. I'm with you on that one. I think she's going to be higher up than that, for sure. Yeah. She is in scintillating form at the moment.
Well, they predicted her a 10.02, and she did 10.03 last year, so I would be very surprised if she wasn't 15 minutes faster than that. I can see her going 9.45 this year.
Honestly, she's going to be right up there, Rob.
Yeah, and it's going to be a real run battle as well, isn't it? Because Lucy's probably going to put, I'd imagine she'll put 10 to 15 minutes into Lucy Gossage in the swim if she swims like she did last year. They'll probably ride about similar on the bike, so it's going to come down to a running race. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Kate Cumber's riding as well, isn't she?
She's on the start list, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Cool.
So we will see. And then on the in the men's race, Rob, Jesse Thomas is racing
back defending.
Yeah.
Because it was it last year or the year before that he raced and beat Jan Frodeno? It was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, last year. Yeah. 8.42. With a 2.46 run.
Wowzers.
Yeah. So he's got... McNamee got third last year.
That's right. You know, Bart Aeronaut, Cyril Viennot, Alessandra Desberry, Peru, Romain Guillaume's racing as well. Cool. So he always goes guns out, doesn't he?
Yeah. So it's going to be a good one to follow, that one, Rob.
Yeah.
And Ruth Purbrook is going to be racing in the age group race, isn't she? I remember.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes, she's going to be racing. It'll be her Ironman debut, I think.
Brilliant. Right, if there's any listeners racing, drop us a line on Twitter. We shall give you a virtual cheer on. Let's hear from you after the race and tell us how you got on and what the conditions were like. You know, there'll be loads of Brits racing out there, so keep us in the loop and keep us informed.
Definitely. And Rob, you have put here that there's a Slate Man party.
Yeah, Slate Man's on this weekend coming up as well. One of the best events, I think, in the UK. So Slate Man Sprint is on Saturday. Slate Man... the big Slate Man race is on Sunday, and then for some people, a lot of the athletes in the team are racing both events and doing this thing called the Slate Man Savage, where they combine the times from the two races.
Yeah,
bonkers. Just but love it. Fabulously bonkers, but bonkers nonetheless. If you're racing Slate Man,
screaming at you.
Yeah. If you're racing Slate Man, I want you to look out for the colour of the water as you run past the power station. I don't know if you've ever done that, Hells. But the water Come that on. Comes out of the power station there looks like you're in the Swiss Alps. It's that electric blue colour.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like nothing else in Snowdonia. It's amazing.
Oh, I love it around there. It's a happy place, Rob. It takes
it
to
is.
A happy place there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, good luck to everyone racing Slate Man. Enjoy the chill.
Good stuff. Right, well, that leads us over into this week's interview. Our interview is sponsored by precisionhydration.com. Now, Precision Hydration have got their online sweat test that you guys need to go and take. They are all, it's a triathlon specific online sweat test where you can fill out lots of information about yourself, and it will collect the data and then give you guidance as to what kind of sweater it sounds like you are based on loads of the questions that they've come up with over the years. So if you haven't taken it, get over to precisionhydration.com. You can get 15% off their products with the code OxygenAddict15. And what they've said they'll do is they'll send through the information about our athletes who've taken it using our code, which is fantastic. And we can get an idea of the sort of information and sweat rates and sweat styles we've got from the people who listen to the show. So we've put a link in the show notes. It's quite a long URL, so we won't read it out. And if you take the sweat test, you'll get entered into a prize draw to win a personalized hydration bundle worth £50. So we're looking forward to getting the results back from the guys over at PH.
Definitely. And Rob, we got to give a shout out before we listen to the interview. Neil Buckman, who listens to the podcast, he over this past weekend did the Hope 24 run, which I think is in Devon. And it's a 24-hour run, basically. He said he did 65 miles.
Good effort.
And he says, he was like, I was like an Oxygen Addict triathlon podcast advert with my Precision Hydration and my tri bars. So good work, Neil, and really, really fantastic effort. 65 miles is superb. And conditions dropped. They had to stop the race in the middle of the night because it got so dangerous. So that is really pretty awesome. So well done.
Yeah, brilliant. And thanks for getting in touch, man. We really appreciate it. Okay, so over to this week's interview then with Guy Hacking from Tribe. Okay, Guy Hacking, welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. It's a real pleasure to have you on. I know a lot of the listeners won't know who you are at this point, but that's soon about to change. So how are you doing today, man, anyway?
Yeah, very good. Very good. I'm very proud to be on. I've listened to the podcast for some time now, and I agree. I'm nowhere near as famous as most of the usual candidates you have on board, so looking forward to catching up.
All that's about to change, man. So background of the story is here, obviously. You're one of the founders of Tribe, who sponsor the show. But you ended up as a sponsor of the show because we had a conversation around why you started the company and your background as an ultra endurance athlete. And these interviews are some of my favourites because I think it's easy to, as a listener, it's easy to listen to the story of a pro triathlete and sit there thinking, well, I wish I could do this. I wish I could be a pro triathlete. But I think the interviews with age groupers, if you like, who are out there doing exceptional things over ridiculous distances are sometimes some of the most interesting stories. So we'll come back around to the Tribe angle and how you ended up starting the company from there. But first up, we'll tell the listeners that your qualification criteria for getting on the show is having completed Marathon des Sables and a 1,000-mile run, which is pretty mind-blowing in itself, isn't it? So let's start by talking about that, Guy.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I suppose these things are contagious or addictive, right? I mean, I started off just doing marathons, you know, straight out of uni. I did, you know, and I was by no means, you know, super competitive. It was, you know, 3 hour 15 marathons or thereabouts, and just really enjoyed it, really enjoyed being outside, really enjoyed pushing myself. But, you know, one thing of always leads to another. And I found myself on the start line to the Marathon des Sables. I pitched the idea to two of my great mates, and they thought, why not? In fact, one of them had never even run a marathon before, and yet he was signing up to do the Marathon des Sables with me, which was, you know, the most fantastic experience. It's such a great race, because what really happens on those multi-day races is effectively, for the vast majority of people who aren't in the top, you know, top 1%, it's not a race, it's a journey. It's about, you know,
survival.
yeah, it is exactly right. And you kind of like, when you find yourself bedding down, you know, making a camp and bedding down next door to people, there's a camaraderie is just, you know, out of this world. And it is about, it's swapping stories, it's sharing food, it's, you know, how are you going to get to the finish line. And that was and that's kind of what I really love. And then you sort of add on to that the scenery that, you know, you're going through these, you know, you've got days where you're going through dunes, you've got days when you're crossing over mountains. It's just spectacular. So that was, you know, the Marathon des Sables was more of an adventure than a race, really. And it's a little bit, you know, like the same when I did an Ironman the year after that. I did Nice. And again, it was the first triathlon I ever did, but it was a very different experience, because obviously with it, when you're doing an Ironman, it is, how fast can you go for over, you know, a specific distance? And when you're doing multi-day stuff, it's an entirely different challenge, because it's as much mental as it is physical, because you kind of want to give it everything. But if you go out too hard on the first day, especially in some heat like that, you're dead in the water for day 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
So it's much more mental, and that way I kind of love it.
Cool stuff. And then, moving on from the MDS experience, obviously that's one thing in itself, but a 1,000-mile multi-day run is a seemingly, to me it seems, an impossible task that I couldn't even consider. So how did that come about?
Yeah. Well, it was the same three guys that we did. I did MDS, well, me and two others that did MDS together, and we loved it. But we just thought, we kind of came off the back of it and thought, you know what, that was great. And we raised, at that time, we raised a bunch of money in the MDS we raised about, I think, £35,000 for African-focused charities. And we really enjoyed training together, and we really enjoyed having a project of, like, raising money for a cause that really we really cared about. And so we thought, okay, well, let's, you know, MDS was good. Let's turbocharge this and do something bigger and better. And we said that we came up with the idea of a 1,000-mile run. We thought it was, you know, it was going to be suitably challenging for us, but also like it's the thing that people could get their heads around and understand, like the magnitude of challenge. But then the question is like, over what period do you do it? And so, you know, we thought 1,000 miles in a month, is that possible? We sort of did the maths and worked it out to be around 35 miles a day, every day for a month. And that suddenly focused the mind. And you're like, God,
yeah,
God, this is,
yeah, it's a long way.
Is possible. But yeah, so we wanted to raise money at the time for the fight against child trafficking. The reason being is at the time when all those horrible cases in Rochdale, where the children were being groomed for trafficking,
yeah,
we were sort of just horrified by the fact that was happening in this day and age. And so we chose a route that would be relevant to that cause. And so we were running from Ukraine to Croatia. And that passes through countries that are acutely affected by trafficking, specifically Moldova, Romania, Bulgaria. There's a lot of gateway countries where humans and children especially are trafficked through to Europe. And so we, on our run, we stopped off at numerous charities that were helping combat this and had sort of first-hand experience of people on the front line. So it kind of really humbled us as well that we thought we were suffering, you know, running 35 miles a day, but the suffering that the people who are sold into trafficking go through, you know, made us sort of strengthen our resolve to get through.
But
it was a fascinating thing because, you know, taking on, you know, I said I love the multi-day element of the Marathon des Sables, but trying to get your head around 30 days worth of back-to-back ultras is basically kind of impossible to train for, and you really just have to see how you respond when you're out there.
Yeah,
you know, we were all working, you know, proper jobs, not like I do now, but we were working proper jobs in the city, you know, in sort of finance and law and all that kind of stuff, and it was, you know, so it was impossible to do, you know, 20, 30 mile runs during the weekdays. So we had to pack it in on the weekends, and we went on amazing trips up to, you know, Cumbria in the Lake District, or we ran London to Brighton. You know, you can find really exciting micro adventures on your doorstep when you're looking for it. But you know, our training was limited to, you know, weekend blocks at best. And so, you know, getting to the start line, you know, none of us genuinely knew whether it was going to be physically possible to get to the finish line, really. And I'd been quite injured in the run up to it. I'd been seeing a doctor, sports doctor, actually the England rugby doctor, who was helping me get fit. I'd had sort of just chronic IT band issues, despite all my incessant rolling and strength and conditioning work. I just couldn't shake it. And so I went in there on quite serious painkillers and having had cortisone injections in both my knees, just to try and get me through. And after day three, I was, you know, I'd come down each morning, could hardly walk. And I just, all I could see was looking down the barrel of the gun to another sort of 27 days of this. So the mental preparation was almost, or not preparation, the mental kind of challenge whilst we were out there was almost the hardest bit, to just keep yourself putting one foot in front of the other and knowing that, you know, you could be spending up to 16 hours on the road each day, was really daunting. But what made it all possible for us is actually, when we set up the project, we thought, how are we going to raise all this money? We could go around begging, borrowing and stealing off everybody that we know, or we could actually make this a community endeavor. And so we published our route online and, asked people to come and join us and asked them if they were going to join us to raise some funds for us, for the charity as well. And it sort of took off in a way that we could never imagined when we started it. And we ended up really like a sort of Forrest Gump trip. We had 250 people running with us by the end.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really was phenomenal. And actually I actually don't know if I would have finished it if it wasn't for all those people coming out, because you always had, you know, something to look forward to. So there was only, of the whole month, there were only 3 days where it was just the three of us who came up with the idea of the project. Apart from that, we were always with at least one or multiple other people. And so that really changed the whole dynamic and made me sort of realize the power of community, the power of like exercising alongside other people that helps you just, you know, pass the hours and give you that motivation to keep going.
Yeah, that's amazing. And how much did you end up raising on that 1,000-mile run? Do you mind me asking?
No. I mean, we were super proud of it. You know, we set off to try and raise 150 grand. We actually raised 250 grand.
Wow.
Which was incredible. And as a result of that, we were backing a single small charity with the objective of building the first safe house rehabilitation centre for trafficked children in the UK. And we achieved that goal, and that centre is up and running and is caring for eight children as we currently speak, who have been saved from trafficking and given special rehabilitation care to help bring them back into society and allow them to live as normal a life as possible after that.
Wow, that's unbelievable, man.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And actually, that the other thing that really was powerful for me in that whole thing was having that underlying mission that we know we're raising funds for this single charity, and we had all these 250 people running beside us, not only being our friends and comrades in exercise, but also they were all with the same fundraising goal to help combat child trafficking. It just gave us such a strong purpose and identity, and really was the thing at the end that drove us through to the finish line.
Wow, I'm really touched by the story. It's very powerful. Yeah. Now I know there's more to this, and we'll come back to it later on. So I know where we're headed with this, which is great, but the listeners don't yet. So let's kind of segue away from the exercise part of it and talk about how you ended up, you and your two friends ended up starting Tribe, because I think that the way that it happened quite naturally is a great story.
Yeah, no, it was really natural, and I feel like there were, now looking back on it, I feel like, you know, there was this sort of almost destiny to the creation of Tribe. But actually, when you're in the middle of the building blocks at the start, it was kind of all just doing our little bit one step at a time. And so the journey to it really was, you know, Marathon des Sables, as you guys probably know, you have to carry all your food on your back for the full 7-day race. And so that made us, you know, get super into nutrition and realizing that, well, if I'm going to have to carry this stuff, it better well be doing its job. And so so we got, you know, we worked with a sports nutritionist, and we got really into, you know, studying the backs of the packets of all the products that there were. And really what the nutritionist said to us is, like, on a multi-day event, we would really advise you against taking these, the incumbent, like, energy gels and energy bars and everything that's out there, because they're, you know, highly refined, full of junk, preservatives, other sort of stuff that, you know, your body is just not able to digest day in, day out. And so to me, that seemed really strange, because I would always just trustingly assumed that these, you know, sports nutrition products were, you know, designed for athletes to perform at their best. But actually, yeah, effectively, when you get into it, it's just refined sugar in different forms. And so, what they advised us to do was trail mixes, effectively, which was, you know, a combination of fruits, nuts, and seeds, which gives you a really high quality mixture of fats, fast release and slow release carbohydrates. And that's what you need to fuel yourself over a long distance. And so that's what we did. We went out to the Marathon des Sables with really unglamorous sacks of plastic sacks of fruits, nuts, and seeds, but it kind of got us through, and we performed super well. All of us came through in the sort of top half of the field, and more importantly, we felt great in the process. And I had experience the year after when I did Ironman, and I fueled myself exclusively on gels, and by the time I got to the marathon leg, I was being sick every 5K, and it kind of sort of sat with me that, you know, if I don't eat these sort of like highly refined products in my everyday diet, then why, when I'm wanting to perform my best, would I be starting to eat those things? You know, so it was really eye opening. But that, maybe I was a bit slow. I didn't change anything for a while, except for just, you know, making these things for myself, despite there being a sort of gaping hole of no one doing it in the market. But we carried on, you know, fueling myself from natural whole foods when I was doing my, you know, amateur level events that I was doing. And then, you know, taking that forwards onto the Run for Love, which is our 1,000-mile run, where we could, obviously we were sleeping in some pretty remote places, so we ate what we could when we could, and more for a volume game than anything else. But when there was an opportunity to eat, like, you know, high quality natural foods, that was our preference. And we really noticed, you know, the days where we fueled ourselves properly, you know, that we were bouncing, and the days when we ate sort of chocolate bars and crisps because that's all we could get our hands on, we were sort of flagging. We had highs and lows and crashes, and you know, it impacts everything, not only performance on the day but also recovery for the following day. And the other real takeaway, as I kind of touched on before, from the run for love, was that power of community and doing stuff together. You know, there's a lot of kind of, you know, the history of running is, you know, the loneliness of the long distance runner, but actually I just don't think that's the case, really. And if you think about humans and our evolution, us as kind of, you know, naturally social pack animals, it's a very natural thing to go out running together and covering distances, long distances together, and that feeling of being part of a community, being part of something more, really helps you like push on and achieve your goals. And I've done, I've done a lot of sort of like ultra distance cycling as well, and like touring across, you know, Africa and Japan and wherever else. And I have one buddy that I always do it with. But I always talk about that yo-yo effect. You know, there is, you know, when you're not feeling great, it tends to be the case that your buddy can carry you, and vice versa. And that being, you know, it's a perfect example of the sum of the parts being way greater than the individual components. And that's kind of really why we focus so heavily on community at Tribe. And that, in fact, that's why we're called Tribe, because we realize that the coming together of people is so powerful in achieving all of our individual aims.
Yeah, that's a great story. And it's definitely, I mean, I'm sure everyone can relate to this, the idea of when you train with somebody or when you're racing next to somebody, even if it's just for a little while, the effect it can have on you is massive, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not just the drafting.
Yeah, much less so in an ultra distance run, I'd imagine, than on the bike.
Exactly.
So how did you guys go then from having sort of made your own? I'm always in awe of people who, firstly, you know, you do things like this, you decide you're going to do this massive event and raise loads of money and get loads of people alongside. So obviously the three of you have got something going on that you can make things happen. But to make the jump from making energy food for yourself and trail mix to deciding, right, we're going to start our own sports nutrition brand, or our own nutrition brand, I think is probably a better phrase. Yeah. How long did that take, and what was the evolution of that then?
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting one, actually, because actually the genesis really was we came back from Run for Love, and that, again, both, you know, Marathon Saab and Run for Love, they were entirely standalone projects, which we, you know, when we finished each of them, there was no underlying like mission or ambition to create what is now Tribe. It was all just kind of like percolating in the background. And my co-founder Tom came to me and Rob with a Graze box, you know, and we were sort of looking at it, and he's like, you know, this is the way that we can, this is the sort of mechanism that we can use to bring our products to market and galvanize a tribe around us, because the idea of these like beautiful, well, actually the Graze, I think their boxes aren't necessarily as engaging as they could be, but we thought what we could do is take that model and use it to have these like beautifully designed boxes with optimal nutrition to meet your needs, personalized to you, that lands for your letterbox and has a real sense of community around it. So we communicate about our events and everything else. And so that was really kind of our initial kernel of an idea, is use this box as a way of bringing people together, sharing information, sharing, you know, inspiration as much as anything else, to get people out and active, and then giving them the fuel to make that happen.
And cool. So, yeah,
that was the original kernel of an idea, and things have kind of, you know, moved a lot since then. But it was a long slog. You know, I always joke that, you know, two lawyers and a banker, and it's not the CVs of people that you would say are the right people to start a sports nutrition brand. I suppose what we were qualified to do is that we were our own customers and we knew our pain points, and so we wanted to really we knew how we wanted to do things differently. But it did mean that we had to like get out on the beat, go out and meet nutritionists, sports scientists, you know, food scientists, manufacturers, box manufacturers, branding agents, website builders. You know, there's so many different pieces that you kind of take for granted as to yeah. what the hell you have to do to actually get the business set up. But we spent the first kind of like first 2 or 3 months, we used to just go back every weekend to Rob's mum's kitchen. She lives in Oxford, and we used to go back there and try and manufacture our trail mixes at scale. And we selected 70 people that we knew that we thought would be good guinea pigs, and we emailed them and said, can we send you some of these boxes over a month? We'll send you one a week for a month, and can you give us your feedback? And these first boxes that we created were, we clearly needed branding help, because they looked awful. They were in neon pink boxes. We had like a tissue paper inside them that made it look more like lingerie than performance nutrition. And I always say that if they were probably more honest with us, Tribe would have never existed, because I probably would have, if I'd received that, I probably would have said, stick to your day job, guys. Don't take the step. But no one did. They were all very encouraging. And lots of them gave us contacts of who we could speak to scale up our production. And so there was just three of us, Rob, Tom and I. Rob went first. He quit his job first. Because he was leading on also product development and operations, and so he worked with nutritionists, he worked with our box manufacturers, and everything else, and he sort of got the prototype up and running. Tom leads on the marketing side of things, so then he went next and looked at what's our route to market, how are we gonna sell our products to people. And then I joined last and was leading on the tech and the finance side. So I helped raise a little bit of capital, seed capital to get us going, and helped on the build of the website to get our first few customers through the door. And that was about 16 months ago now.
It sounds like you're really driven by, because I mean, as anybody knows who's quitter. A relatively, in inverted commas, a relatively stable traditional job to kind of go out into a startup and do your own thing. It's a massive leap of faith, isn't it? That and if you were anything like me when I did it, people are never short of advice to stick with the thing that's tried and trusted, and well, there's a lot of security with his pension kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of respect for you guys for doing that.
It is, and it is a huge leap. But actually, I think in a way, you need to be naively optimistic about this kind of stuff, because it is hard. It is hard. There's so many things that when you think about starting a business, there's so many things that you never realize, you never consider. You hear about the Facebooks or the Airbnbs and this kind of stuff, and actually, there's so much hard graft that goes with it that actually, you know. In a lot of ways, there are a lot of parallels with ultra running, endurance running. You know, there are some massive highs and lows, but without the lows, there aren't the highs. And it requires that sort of steely determination that you get from you know, the sports that we do. And actually, what we're so lucky with is that built into the absolute DNA of our business is this ultra distance running, or just being outside and exercising. And so much so, you know, we have a run club every Tuesday that meets we're based in London, so it meets in central London, in Shoreditch. And we get, you know, every week we're training with our customers and actually they're now sort of friends, really. And it's a wonderful thing that sort of.
So listen, let's give that a bit more publicity then, because if we've got listeners in London who want to come down and meet you guys and go for a run, you're based in Shoreditch and it's on a Tuesday, is that right?
Yeah, exactly right. So it's 6:45 from our offices. So you can come swing by and see our offices at the same time, see where it all happens. And we typically do sessions I designed it to do, and I'm sorry, worth saying, I'm not a qualified instructor, but I designed it such that we're doing the things that I hate doing by myself. So it really leans on the tribe, and so it's the sprints, it's
hard
the sprint
work.
Yeah, exactly. So we do threshold sprints between 200 to 800 meters, depending on the weeks, and then interspersed with that, we do strength and conditioning work, and we focus on the stuff that you need to stay injury free. So we do a lot of core work, we do a lot of glute work, and then we do some sort of total body work, and it's the sort of thing, as I say, that like if you've got someone that you're chasing up ahead of you, or that's chasing you behind, or you see someone next door to you doing more burpees than you, it really helps you push on through. Whereas if you're sort of by yourself in the park, it's easy to skive.
Yeah, well, so if anyone's looking for a group workout, then down in London in the Shoreditch area, get over and meet you guys. It sounds like a lot of fun, man, for sure.
Yeah, it is. And it's worth saying, obviously, it's also free. So it's more for me, it's just to like be out there training with people. And we love the more the merrier. So
love it.
Come one, come all.
Love it. Right, so we alluded to this a little bit earlier on. The thing that you guys have got going on this year, your fundraiser for this year, is blowing my mind. So just tell us about your Run for Love duathlon for this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're super excited about it. And actually, it's the continuation of, we did the 1,000-mile run from Ukraine to Croatia, and now we're continuing that journey, and we're going from effectively Croatia, or we're going from Sarajevo back to London. The plan is to do... it's from the 30th of June through to the 16th of July, and we're splitting it into multiple stages, and you can come and join for any or all of them. We have about 150 people signed up to join us along the way at the moment, at various stages. The first bit, we'll be running from Sarajevo to Zagreb, and that's leaving, as I say, on the 30th of June through to the 5th of July. That is, we're doing 35 miles a day for 6 days. And that is taking us effectively through the Balkans, finishing in Zagreb. There, we hop onto our bikes, and there'll be an amazing first stage from the 7th of July through to the 9th of July, going from Zagreb to Munich, through Slovenia, Austria, and then going through sort of, you know, Bavaria, so southern
scenery
Germany.
Down there is amazing, man, isn't it? Slovenia and Austria is just amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be spectacular. Going over the Alps, there are going to be some great climbs. And that also happens, falls over a weekend. So no excuses. You don't even need to take any holidays. Just hop on your bike and come and join us. We'd love you to. And on the bike, we're averaging, depending on the hilliness of the days, between 100 to 135 miles a day. So some pretty serious distances. But really, it's kind of galvanizing that tribe mentality. We're not racing this. This is a multi-day thing. We're getting through it together, and it's really about that community and that experience of that we tasted in the Mountain de Sable, and that we tasted in our last 1,000-mile run. It's that, you know, one for all, that tribe mentality that we really like to encourage. You know, that there's no winners. It's just everybody is. It's about getting everybody across the finish line.
It's about getting you guys there with the biggest draft possible.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. So anybody with fancies the idea of multi-stage 100-mile bike rides and towing you boys along, then
yeah,
they need to get themselves. It looks amazing, man. I'm gutted I'm going to be... I was telling you before, I'm away out of the country working in that exact two-week period. Otherwise, I'd have been down to do some of it for sure. But I'm sure we've got some listeners who would fancy doing it. Is there a cost to do this for people?
Yeah, there's a small cost, and we're running it entirely at zero profit for ourselves. This is not a tribe thing. We actually we've actually recently incorporated a foundation, so a charity effectively, that is continuing the fight against human trafficking.
Brilliant.
We're organizing all of the logistics for everybody. And we're just effectively passing those costs on at cost to all of the participants. So we will have a physio traveling with us. We've got a support vehicle. We don't have a mechanic, so make sure you can fix your bike.
Or if there's any mechanics listening who've got a few days free in the summer, there you go.
Exactly.
Get down and volunteer.
And so the cost is £100 per stage. And we split up into three stages, and that really is just as I said, to cover costs, and then accommodation will be booking that for you and letting know how much it costs. But that will be, again, low cost. This is not going to be a luxury ride, but you will have a roof over your head.
Awesome. Sounds great.
I suppose worth pointing out, we do have a website for it. So if anybody's interested, go to www.triberunforlove.com, and you've got all the information there. You can register online, FAQs, and links to emails that you can send any questions to if they're not covered on the FAQ section.
It's a great website as well, I've got to say. It's well designed and it's easy to navigate. Go down and check that out. And then we should also mention, when you guys have ridden your 1,000 miles all the way and eventually ended up in Surrey, there's then a last day run, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. And that's going to be a real celebration. I mean, it's not a small run. It is a 20-miler.
Perfect.
Along the North Downs Way. So it's going to be trail running. Super beautiful. I've run that route a couple of times. We go via Box Hill, so it's a few hills in there to keep everybody on their toes. And then we're finishing it at this amazing on the grounds, this amazing stately home just in Surrey, where there'll be music, food, festival vibes, and our target is to try and get 600 people to come down to that and really create a great finale for all the runners and riders, but also have a really fun trail run for all those people who are doing it, taking down the last day, and then the requisite celebrations after 2 weeks of solid exercise.
Sounds brilliant. Yeah, I absolutely love it. All right, so listen, everybody, if you're interested in this, get yourselves over to triberunforlove.com. There's loads of information about all the various different stages of running and riding, and like I said, it's all really well laid out. And of course, you guys are going to have the best natural sports nutrition along the way as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're also in the process of developing energy and hydration drink as well, which we will be road testing in extreme scenarios when we're out there, because it can be up to sort of 35 degree heat. And so we're going to be having all of our products plus some new ones to road test when we're out there. So yeah, one thing you will have is plenty of nutrition, so you don't need to worry about that.
That's brilliant. Well, listen, I highly recommend our listeners get over and check this out, because I've got to say, firstly, the products are brilliant, really tasty, and they really do the job well. But more than anything, you've got a fantastic ethos behind your company, man. And the fact that you're doing such great work raising money for your charities as well, I think is a really great story. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing it with us. If people want to learn more about your company, your setup, your runs, your duathlons, where can they go to get the information from?
Yeah, sure. So everything tribe related, go to www.weartribe.co, not .co.uk or .com, .co. And that is everything around the nutritional side of things. And then obviously then there's the duathlon, which is triberunforlove.com.
Awesome stuff. Well, listen, Guy, thanks ever so much for your time, mate. It's been great to have you on the show, and we'll definitely catch up with you again after this event. Like I said, I'm gutted that that's the exact 2 weeks that I'm not going to be in the country, because I'd love to have come to take part, but definitely next year, man.
Next year.
You got it. All right.
Looking forward to it.
All right, buddy. Thanks very much. We'll speak to you again soon.
Perfect. Thank you.
Isn't that awesome, Hells? A 2,000-kilometre duathlon across all of Europe to finish in London with a massive party.
I think, that is, isn't it cool how when you get an idea or something like that, and like he was saying about the journey that they did, that 1,000 mile run, and they raised all that money, and it's almost like the word spreads and you can get more and more people joining in. And I've got people that I know at the moment are running Land's End up to John O'Groats, and you know, they're sort of saying, oh, if we're coming through, come and join us. We'd love people to come and join us on the run, and trying to spread good news and things like that. And it's just like, it kind of creates this community feel, doesn't it? And like you were saying, with the runs that they do every week in London, like there is just such a positive vibe.
Yeah, it's great. I think that the product's been driven by the community rather than vice versa. I think it's like it's not a marketing stunt. They ended up producing the bars because they needed something to fuel them for the really cool stuff they were doing. And I think that that's great. And I would love it if we had some listeners who were going to go out and take part in the duathlon. I was all excited as I was doing the interview. And then when I checked the dates, I'm totally away for the entire 2 weeks that this duathlon is going to take place over. And I would love it if there were some listeners who heard that and were like, do you know what? I fancy doing a 3-day bike ride through the Alps. What a perfect opportunity to do it with some other people. So get over there and check it out. We'll put the link in the show notes. And I think it's triberunforlove.com from memory. But we'll have that in the show notes for sure for you to go over and check out. And they've got all the details you need about entry and travel and all that kind of stuff. So they are super cool.
And don't forget, the offer that we have is that you can get a like a free trial pack of 6 energy bars, trail mix. You can ask for what you want in there, recovery bar, shakes, for £1 if you use the code OXYGENADDICT. So go on to wearetribe.co.
Awesome stuff. Well, that brings us to the end of our show, Hels, for this week. What have you got planned for the rest of your week?
Oh, just preparing, Rob, preparing.
Preparing for the half outlaw.
Correct. At work as well, actually, every day, but then yep.
Yeah, but we know that doesn't count, don't we? That's just what you do in between preparing for the half outlaw.
Correct. So that is the main aim for this week, is to prepare for that. Looking forward to it.
Nice. Nice stuff. I'm going to go and run around half of the Dales with Rushy again this weekend, so should be good fun. Or sore, or both.
Both, everything. And just remember, keep focused on that goal, Rob. You'll be fine.
Keep focused on the fact we can get out there and we can do it. The Lucy Gossage exactly. Video, you know, we've got the opportunity to go and do it and we love it, so let's get off our backsides and go out and have some fun, right?
Correcto. And just to confirm, Rob, it is triberunforlove.com.
Brilliant. All right, well, listen, thank you very much for listening to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast. We've been brought to you by precisionhydration.com, wearetribe.co, and tgstore.co.uk. Check out the links in the show notes to take you direct to their sites and use the promo codes, because that lets them know that you are listeners from our show, and that'll get you a nice discount as well. So until next week, have a fantastic, inspirational racing and training week. Get out there and do something cool. I've been Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And yeah, have a good one. Thanks for listening. See ya.